Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
There was someone who came and talked to me about doing a play in New York and playing Thomas Jefferson in a play.
Oh, cool.
Well, no.
No?
Because
I mean, Thomas Jefferson's a big deal.
Yes, but Thomas Jefferson's like the enemy of George Washington. I've been living in this man's shoes for a little too long. And it's an interesting play. It's Dostoevsky, I think, Thomas Jefferson, and another guy. I was like,
Aretha Franklin.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, I'll play Aretha.
Matt Albers.
Yes. Matt Albers.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All righty then. We are live at the time we are recording this at about 8:15 in the morning. We're live on the corner of Wisconsin Avenue Northwest and Jennifer Street Northwest at Chatter, where we're open for breakfast, and we have acknowledgement of that with T-shirts that I'm holding up, and I will get to all of those things. Howard Fineman is with us. Gene McManus is with us. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel will do the news. The Socialite is here and has brought his golfing partner, Marvin Bush.
He has a retinue.
No, the Socialite does not travel alone anymore.
He has a posse.
He's got people around him all the time. Soon he'll have armed guards. You're going to say to me, of course, you have to acknowledge what has gone on in Virginia at a baseball practice for the congressional baseball game, that Steve
Scalise
was shot along with AIDS. And I will tell you that, of course, I'm going to acknowledge that. I cannot, at this point, at 8:15 in the morning, and you're going to hear this at the earliest at 11 o'clock in the morning in the East or 8 o'clock in the morning in California, I can't add to it. I think that the event will outrun us, and you will know much more about this as you're hearing my voice. So in acknowledging it, I'm also going to move away from it because I just, you know, right, Howard, there's nothing, we don't know anything.
All we do know at this point is that there was a shooting at the practice, the Republicans' practice for the congressional baseball game this weekend. Scalise, who's the House Majority Whip, was injured but is in stable condition, and that's all we know at this point.
So we're going to move away from that, and if we get something later definitively, we can talk about it. And I will do what I normally do, which is troll for applause. John McCartney writes, I'm a native New Yorker, slightly younger than you, but probably measured in days, not years. I was recruited by Lefty, but not to the Terps. So that must have been a Davidson. I'm a longtime PTI loyalist, but living in France, Paris, I know, tough duty, in Chicago. I never had much exposure to the radio show. The past 2 years, all three of my children have been in D.C., and please tell Wilbon they're Ignatius grads, and they turned me on to the show. Now I'm a religious devotee of the podcast. Your complete, accurate, and might I say almost soulful rendition of Meet the Mets on PTI the other day warmed the cockles of my heart. Child of a Dodger fan and a Giant fan, I was born to hate the Yankees, and the Mets stole my youth. Love all the Mets heroes, from Choo Choo to Garrett Morris. Garrett Morris, of course, baseball been very, very good to me. Your insight into the ambiguities generated by four-fingered mascots reflected the true value of a liberal arts education and completely validated your Doctor of Humane Letters honorary degree. However, as a close-to-Queens native, you missed one vital point. Cultural assimilation in New York City's most diverse borough includes training in a wide variety of only in New York essentials, including how to give the middle finger without a middle finger. Because Mr. Met only has a mitten hand.
Right.
He has four fingers and not five, so you can't in four get a middle. But for those of you who don't remember the song because you're not from there, meet the Mets, step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life because the Mets are really sucking the ball, knocking those home runs over the wall. East side, west side, everybody's coming down to meet the Mets Mets of New York Town. Now, there is a second verse, apparently, which is much like the third verse of the Star-Spangled Banner, and nobody knows it. And I don't know it.
Am I allowed to sing Beat 'em Bucks?
No, you're not allowed to because, that's far too much Pittsburgh-centric nonsense.
I know, I'm not saying anything about Pittsburgh.
Show.
I'm not saying anything about Pittsburgh.
I went to the Palm the other night, and I hadn't been there in a really long time because I now own a restaurant. But I really was happy to go and got a letter from Derek from the 20th Special Forces Group Airborne, who writes, Bonjour, old doctor. They have a really nice sign here at the Palm. It actually has the same name as the restaurant it is on. Hope that happens for you soon. And as Howard, as you pointed out,
it looks great.
The Chatter sign looks great, right?
I love the Chatter sign because the lettering is in the form of an old-fashioned typewriter font.
Deliberately so.
Typewriters were these metal
things that you typed on, that I typed on when I started, that Tony typed on, and I think it's wonderful. I love it.
So we have T-shirts. We don't know who sent the T-shirts.
No, we don't.
These are great prizes, these particular T-shirts. And they're orange. And they say, I ate breakfast at Chatter, and all I got was this stinking T-shirt. And on the back, They say, yes, he is a doctor now. No, he will not check out Uranus, which is very funny. And there are only four of these. And I usually go through the restaurant throwing stuff around, but I'm going to be judicious in giving these things out. These are really sweet. And I should talk about scheduling. We will not. This is Wednesday. We will not be on the show Friday. Next week, I'm only doing two shows here in Washington because I'm called to Bristol, where, for those of you who saw Bridge of Spies, I will be paraded around like Francis Gary Powers.
I've been called to Bristol.
Yeah, and everybody will say, oh,
summoned to Bristol.
Him.
He's
yes.
on vacation yeah. again.
Yeah, so, and Michael, we should talk a little bit about the summer schedule because people expect us to be gone throughout July and August, but we indeed plan to be on at least once a week,
that's
right?
That's big news. I sort of thought you were going to hold that to yourself for another week.
No,
or two.
I mean, we're going to be on once a week. In fact, we have one show that I'm very excited about. I hope it turns out correctly. On July 3rd, we hope to have Ron Darling here because the Mets are in town to play the Nats, and Ron has agreed to come to chatter, and we have him for an hour or so, which would be good because he's
a great
pitcher and a great broadcaster and went to Yale. You know, so, I mean, all of that is cool. So
Binghamton, Yale.
Right now it looks like there's probably four shows on the calendar for that stretch, the first 2 weeks in July.
Yeah.
There will likely be a full two-week dark period maybe in the beginning of August.
I'm entitled of vacation, but then we're going to do shows in the summer.
Yeah. And we're trying to build these shows mainly on Mondays, but also around events throughout the summer that would cater to a good show. So the Monday after Dad and my father-in-law finished last...
Right, in the member guest. We'll come in and we'll explain how terrible we were and why we're being barred from all further member guests.
This was very useful. You have to give the littles out there hope.
Yes.
They need to have a reason to live, and I think this will be it.
And I should point out, as you said, the schedule for next week, we'll be here for Monday and Tuesday, but up in New York.
New York, with Tony Reale and Pablo
Torre.
So that would be fun. I want to, because Father's Day is Friday, I think we should do the promo.
Sunday,
I think we should do the promo, Michael, for Johnny O. Because I was wearing Johnny, so even the socialite looked and said, oh, Johnny O. So, and Marvin said, I know him. I said, you should ought to get some shirts. He says, I've got shirts. Because as we know, Johnny O goes from country club to play in member guests and hand out shirts. That's his job.
John O'Donnell is the glue that just connects club golfers together around the country. He knows everyone.
It's an enormously important population, but a small, small part of the population, a thin crust.
Like here. A 1%.
Less even.
The Dr. Tony code is still live. You can get a link to the Johnny O website through our website. We're giving out recommendations. I love the Mulligan golf short. The Marin pant is a good lightweight summer pant. It does run a little bit slim. Who taught you?
Is that an Ivy League education that you
pant.
Say pant
yes,
and short?
Yes, exactly.
The rest
pant.
Of us.
I feel
pants.
Like I'm sitting next
shorts.
To Anna Wintour.
Yes, I know.
What is this?
Pants. All right, well, getting back to the clothing.
Pants, buddy.
Yeah.
We have an Atwater golf polo, which is great, and just their classic four-button traditional polo is always a good choice. You know, people are beginning to notice there's another show that does quite well in the Sports and Rec podcast rankings, and they currently have the same 30% off Johnny O discount code available to their listeners, and I want our listeners to wash those guys down the drain.
Right, and maybe get 31%. That would be the added 1%. What is our code?
Dr. Tony.
Dr. Tony. For those of you from the Dominican, it's just DR.
Right.
Okay, so I just wanted to mention that you know there is a lull in the sports seasons when ESPN opens with the Minnesota Twins. The Minnesota Twins getting 20 runs and 28 hits. And this reminds me, I have a friend, Paul Tews. And Paul Tews is a Democratic operative. Maybe you know him.
I do know him.
He ran Iowa for Barack Obama.
He was key. He was one of the most important people in Barack Obama winning the presidency.
Okay, so he is professionally Minnesotan. And he believes that ESPN never gives Minnesotan teams the credit that they should and writes me angry emails and wrote me an email about 2 weeks ago. Your company is ignoring the Twins. The Twins are in first place. This is part of the bias against all Minnesota teams. And I told him to calm down. Let's play golf and stop being insane, which, of course, he is. They led with it today. So now Tews cannot go nuts. I expect a full apology from Paul Tews because they led with the fact they showed every hit, every run, 20 runs and 28 hits.
Well, I bet you, I think a 20-run game would be a big deal no matter what was going on.
It's a big deal. So here's like sort of the open of the show because this is blind for all of you people. I ended up here yesterday doing the Dan Colco podcast. He does a Nats podcast, Dan Coco, and John Harvey is with him. And John is the producer of the pre- and post-game shows that I like so much with Ray Knight and
for
Johnny
those
Holiday.
Out of the D.C. market, Dan Coco is the on-field reporter for the regional cable group
right.
that covers the Nats and the Orioles.
So he came up with a great bit, and I'm going to give him all the credit in the world. And the bit is this okay? Something happens in your life, and you ask, is this okay? In his particular case, it was this. He went out to eat with a friend of his. They both ordered some form of burgers. His friend cut the burger in half with a knife before eating any of the burger. And Dan Coco asked, is this okay? He went to two Nats players. One, Sean Kelly, an obvious Neanderthal, said this was terrible beyond all words. You're just awful. You can't do that. You're supposed to wear the hamburger after you're done eating it. And Max Scherzer, who I love, a total bulldog, Max said, it's on the edge, but it's okay. Howard, is this okay?
If you're someone who wears a pant.
Maybe a marin pant?
A marin pant, yes. Otherwise, no.
You would not do it.
Oh, no.
One of the things
not.
I pointed out, because Coco said that he had an online poll about this, and he said it was 56-44 in favor of it is not okay.
Yeah.
But what I said is, did the people who responded to your online poll, how many of them eat fast food hamburgers all the time that tend to be very much smaller and devourable without cutting them in half? And he had no information on that. Gene, is this okay?
Let me provide the woman's angle. I always cut my hamburger in half because I can only eat half of it. And then I take the other half home and eat it the next day.
Okay, but this was not a woman. I mean, I don't know if that plays into your answer.
Well, I have to be honest.
No one is saying that. In fact, what Sean Kelly said was that women do this all the time.
Okay.
But so...
All right, so if this is like...
Let's say David.
David would be wearing the hamburger on the way home,
okay.
like the rest of you.
Right, right.
We have some women in the audience shaking their head. No, they would not cut it.
They would not cut it.
Not cut it.
So now the burgers at Chatter are big. They're big. I could see cutting them here.
Now, I would never cut a sausage egg McMuffin in half.
Well, that...
I would inhale that thing in about...
Right.
13 seconds.
Okay, but that again, that's a big, fast food size.
But a big stacked hamburger, I'm going to cut it.
Okay. Nigel?
Well, I don't cut hamburgers. I cut Hershey bars when I have those.
Or Snickers.
Snickers, yes.
Those are Snickers.
That's the way you really want to eat them.
That was mentioned on the show. Cutting Snickers.
Yeah, I mean, if it's huge and I've got a small mouth, you know, you're like, how am I going to make this work? But you always find a way to make it work. I would let it slide, but as Joseph said, it's right on the edge.
Michael?
Can you eat the burger with one hand?
That's, I think, a
good starting point. For me, it comes down to what type of restaurant, what type of presentation. If you're going to a place like Five Guys, if you're going
here
to
In-N-Out,
here we go
again, presentation.
These burgers are meant to be enjoyed in just sort of one continuous bite. Don't put
right.
the burger down. If
right.
you're picking up, putting
Keep
down.
Keep it in your hand the whole
cut
way.
Cut the burger in half.
Right.
So if you have something with onion straws, barbecue sauce, bacon, you know, just a big... Not even gourmet, just a big fancy burger, it's okay to cut in half. It also depends on what you have on the side, because that, you know, if you have all the spillage from the burger, that might affect your enjoyment of maybe the french fries or
right.
side salad.
If it's that big, cutting it in half isn't going to help.
I'm getting so hungry. Could somebody
Can we have some
the
burgers here?
Kitchen bring something to
One
me?
Of the
Morning
things
burgers.
That Sean Kelly said that he also found offensive was people who dip each individual french fry individually in ketchup. He felt that was way over the edge. I don't use ketchup, so I don't know how that works. But I know that I really like the concept of wet fries when they take gravy and put it on the french fries, and I just dump it on. You know, I don't do you individually do this?
Well, I'm thinking of Ben's Chili Bowl at this point. Now I'm really getting hungry.
Yeah.
Because they put the cheese.
By the way,
attacking
my son, considering you went to a private four-year liberal arts
yeah.
school and sent your children to the same places, and your daughter, in fact,
it's true.
University of Pennsylvania,
yeah.
and just ask her if she says pant. Just ask
oh,
her.
Oh, Meredith, a pant, she says it in French, I believe. Yes. Yeah, and Nick, too. You know, Nick is a big boy, but he probably says pant. I
okay.
agree.
So one other small story. I take the dog out. I take Jesse out this morning at about 5:30 or somewhere around 5:30, and it's already light at 5:30, which is wonderful. And as I'm walking, there's a deer in a yard, And it's just a solitary deer, a pretty big deer.
Solitary for now.
It's a recon unit.
Well, okay, so it's a solitary deer.
Just dropped off its baby
and
at daycare.
Yeah, the deer is just eating, you know, eating plants or whatever deer do.
Taking notes, seeing who's around.
I saw the deer. The dog did not eat. The dog, all dogs live their lives through their noses. They have the best noses in the world. The dog did not sniff the deer at all, did not know the deer was there. I moved to the other side of the street. The deer eventually just ambled across the avenue into the other side of the street, casually jumping up and starting, like, without a care in the world, and I'm pulling the dog away. The dog did not sniff the deer. Did deer not have smells? How does that happen?
The deer...
You have deer in your yard.
Stealth deer?
The deer knows the score. The deer knows that you and Jesse cannot lay a glove on him.
Oh, I understand. So I think it's a her. I thought it was a her because I didn't see any antlers.
Well, either
I don't
way.
Know. Yeah.
When I was walking here this morning from the car,
in the city. I live in the city.
Yeah, well,
I don't live
woman
in the country.
A half block away, walking her dog and looking at her iPhone, and there was a bunny right in the middle of the sidewalk. The dog paid no attention to the bunny.
Didn't go after.
The woman paid no attention to the bunny. And finally, they were in with about 5 feet of the bunny, and the bunny just kind of ambled up the walk and hid in the bushes.
The bunny had no fear of a dog?
Not this one.
My dog goes after Mr. Rabbit. Doesn't catch Mr. Rabbit, but goes after.
On the subject of wildlife in Northwest D.C.,
yes.
The rabbit thing hit. I live six blocks from
here. Tired of the rabbits.
But, well, they weren't around... a few years ago, but in this neighborhood, in the last few years, we're inundated with them.
What do you?
And they're very tame, and they're fearless.
Well, but they eat your tomatoes. Okay, they eat your peppers and your tomatoes.
Yeah, they eat every lettuce.
Yeah, so that's not good. Yeah.
Do you live on the street with the people with the chickens in the backyard?
A few blocks away from them. I don't know them, so I should be careful about what I say here.
Okay.
But
they're not listening.
A whole political... I'm sure they're listening. They live right down the street.
Listening?
The whole idea that there's a political movement...
Right.
In D.C., built around
chickens.
Having the ability to keep chickens in your backyard is the most ridiculous waste of time. If you're interested in
why don't we just put on our license plates Wild and Wonderful?
Yeah.
No why chickens. Don't we just do that?
I don't want chickens. I mean, my great grandfather, you know, lived in Poland or whatever and needed chickens.
Right.
I'm here after several generations wanting to get away from chickens.
Come on, Colgate, baby.
No chickens. No chickens.
All right, let's get out of here. We will have Richard Sandomir. When we return, he has written a book about the movie The Pride of the Yankees entitled The Pride of the Yankees, and I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Audible ad. Now that summer season is here, it means long car rides to the shore, outdoor chores like mowing and gardening, so polish your car while you shine up your life with Audible. Audible is a leading provider of premium digital spoken audio premium digital spoken audio information and entertainment on the internet. Audible content includes an unmatched selection of audio books and other audio products. The other audio products really help your life. This is bad copy. Really help your life, that glossy finish? That doesn't make any sense. Who wrote the copy?
It was not me. I don't know who wrote it.
Audible's good. Copy's bad.
Hemingway?
Users can sign up as an Audible listener, which gives them book credits and access to short programs now playing in channels each month for a low monthly fee. Customers download their choices. They can access them on their iPhone, Android device, Kindle, iPod, or other MP3 player. Come on, even I have one of these devices, except I don't know what it is. And I used to only listen to nonfiction when I had audiobooks, and I used to only listen to nonfiction because I thought I would learn something. And now I would listen to anything because it's very nice to listen to that stuff. Maybe now I need to queue up some business titles with my recent ventures. Maybe I'd be better off looking in self-help or fantasy. Fantasy. Okay, back to the copy. No matter what genre of book you read, Audible has it. Now I'm able to enjoy a walk with my dog and listen to my favorite books. And you can too. You can listen to books on walks with your dog. That is, you can't take Chessie yet, although we could rent Chessie out. I wonder if Chessie listened to the Monk book when training me. That is the book, The Monk's Spiritual Guide to Training Dogs. That's a fabulous book. Just Audible is offering listeners to this high-quality podcast a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to Audible, audible.com/Tony, and browse the unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It is that easy. Go to audible.com/Tony. That's audible.com/Tony and get started today. And then we would correct the copy earlier because we actually think this is a good product.
Yes.
I wrote that copy. Maybe before we printed it out, we could have checked it for that one missing word. Other than that, it was
pretty good. Well, good job out of you. I thought the Audible people knew all about Chessy.
Well, no. The second part of that copy was flawless.
It was. It's just the first.
It was missing a word. I have some experience as an editor if you ever need it.
Okay, we're giving it to Gene.
There we go.
All right, we'll be back.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Craig Miller, who writes, my cousin sent me a link to an email for Tony's show. The link was to send in original music for consideration. Well, I'm familiar with Tony from his years covering the Washington Redskins and his work on PTI, of course. I play in a group called Grand Old Ditch. That's a good name. Grand Old Ditch. But I also do my own stuff. I recently released a solo record called A Spark. I've shared the album with folks via Dropbox. I know you probably get a lot of these, but feel free to peruse the tracks. If you deem one to be suitable for some show music, please use it as you see fit. We could fill 10 jukeboxes with the good stuff we've got. This is Craig Miller from Grand Old
And the
Ditch.
Song is Biscuits and Coffee.
Biscuits and Coffee is the song? Okay. This leads us into Richard Sandomir, my friend of many years, who I haven't talked to actually in a long time because I didn't even know that Richard was no longer writing sports television criticism for the New York Times. I didn't even know that. But he has a new book out, and the book is called The Pride of the Yankees. Now, this is, for people that don't know this, and there's young people listening, this is the great movie, the Gary Cooper movie about the life of Lou Gehrig. It's a classic movie. And I mean, the first thing is, we're old, Richard. I mean, when was the last time that anybody, that you had a conversation with anybody under the age of 50 and the name Gary Cooper ever even came out? So I would ask you, why did you write this?
Well, you know, we all have our little obsessions, and I started getting obsessed with the movie, and especially the speech about 10 or 15 years ago, right? Went through a couple of rounds of proposals. And I, you know, the more I looked into it, the more I realized that this really is the first great sports film.
Yeah.
You would not say that it's a great sports film compared with, I don't know, Bull Durham right now. It's a different kind of era. In 1942, it was a great sports film, and it holds up really well because of Gary Cooper delivering the speech and because of the love story between Teresa Wright and Gary Cooper. So, you know, it's just been something that's been percolating in me for a long time.
I'm not going to say it's the Gettysburg Address or anything like that, but there is nobody that doesn't know the line, I consider myself the luckiest man in the world. I mean, that Lou Gehrig lives on. You make the point, and I did read a few chapters last night, which I never do. I never read anything anymore. But you do make the point, and I'm gonna tease it in a bad way. But that as a career move, an athlete dying young immortalizes him. It immortalizes him, and it did for Lou Gehrig, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. Look, if he had retired on July 4th, 1939, a healthy player but diminished and live another 30 years, there'd be no reason to do a movie, or he might be immortalized in part by his numbers, but it wouldn't be a personal thing. He became a much more interesting person because he had ALS, and because within a year ALS was named for him, not officially, but it became known as Lou Gehrig's disease. So there, you know, one of the reasons the movie was made is because of a man named Niven Bush, who saw in him a boring person at first and then a fascinating person. In 1929, Bush wrote a profile of Gehrig for the New Yorker. He thought of him as the most boring guy who wasn't even deserving of adulation. This is 1929. He was 4 or 5 years into a great career.
Yeah.
He found him a dullard. 12 years later, Bush, who would also marry Teresa Wright, is a story editor for Samuel Goldwyn, who made the movie, and he ran, you know, he said, Sam, just go into your screening room. I'm going to show you the newsreel of Gehrig saying goodbye. He watches it. He starts crying. Then he orders that Eleanor Gehrig that a deal be made with her. So, you know, it's, if Gehrig had retired in a normal course of events and lived another 30 years, there'd be no movie.
So we see this a lot in sports movies, especially if you're a sports writer. You see a lack of, and here's a fancy word, verisimilitude. You see that people can't play. Now, in some movies, in Friday Night Lights, they're playing football. I mean, they're hitting. That's really good. But famously, Tony Perkins, who played Jimmy Pearsall in Fear Strikes Out, was awful, awful beyond words. William Bendix, who played Babe Ruth, awful beyond words. Gary Cooper, a non-athlete and a non-lefty. How did maybe people didn't care at that point if somebody looked like a baseball player, but how much concern was that? And when you watch it now, how do you feel about it?
Well, Cooper himself was concerned because he had never played baseball before. He grew up at a time in Montana where kids didn't play baseball, and he went to school in London for a few years as a kid when other kids might have been learning baseball. So his greatest concern was not just playing the game, but because Gehrig's memory was so clear to so many people. He just died a year earlier.
Yeah.
But in 1942, people would see a movie maybe once, maybe a few times, and then there would be no afterlife until television came along. So people weren't focused on whether he was, he was a reasonable facsimile of Gehrig. But got to give him credit. He never played baseball before. He took a six-week tutorial with Lefty O'Doul and, to a small degree, Bill Dickey. And he was a right-handed athlete.
Yeah.
He was a horseman. He was a stunt rider. I think he did reasonably well. Now, there's a legend that he failed so badly that the film was flipped. But the expertise that I drew on, which is a senior curator of the Hall of Fame, Tom Schieber, said that there's only really one scene that seems to have been flipped. It was the minor league montage where you see Cooper throwing. And the telltale sign of throwing is that in one scene, there's a Band-Aid on the palm of one hand, and in the other scene, it appears on the other hand.
So it could have been flipped.
Yeah, it most likely was.
Yeah.
Throwing probably being the hardest thing to do when you're...
With your other hand.
Yeah, with your other hand. It's very tough. And if you look at his left-handed swing, think of this. He didn't have to unlearn bad habits from being a right-handed athlete. So if you look at his swing, A, it never shows a ball connecting with the bat, and B, it's not that bad. Now, nowadays, it would not be acceptable.
You couldn't do it.
You'd have to get somebody of the quality of a Kevin Costner or Chadwick Boseman, who was terrific in 42.
Yeah.
You just couldn't do it then. But in 1942, with as little baseball action as there actually is in part of the Yankees, and with Samuel Goldwyn, who didn't know anything about baseball, wanting a love story and the story of a courageous human being who just happened to play baseball, it really didn't matter.
There's two things that I find remarkable on reflection about this, and the first one is that for anybody who has ever thought of Lou Gehrig, Gary Cooper is what comes to mind. Like, there's no sense of Lou Gehrig and, going to Columbia and being a scholar athlete and stuff like that. There's just Gary Cooper. What do you make of that? I mean, is anybody in the Gehrig family, were they upset at that?
No, I don't think there isn't much of the Gehrig family to consider.
Right.
There were no children. And this was a project that Eleanor Gehrig was very much in favor of. She was very involved, and she got $30,000 for the rights. She sat down with Paul Gallico to help write but Gallico drew on her memories. So nobody was upset about that. I think part of the reason why we think of Cooper and not Gehrig when we think of the image of Gehrig is because the original newsreel is in tatters. There's very little of it left. Yes, we can sum it up on YouTube, the luckiest man on the face of the earth line and a couple other lines, but somehow that newsreel doesn't exist anymore in total. So what we learn of the speech comes mainly from the movie, and it's a different speech. The luckiest man line is moved from the second line in the speech to the end for dramatic effect. It's shorter. It thanks fewer people. And also, from that time, the 20s and 30s, there isn't a whole lot of video or film of anybody. If you're going to see anybody in film like that, there are different discoveries of Babe Ruth films, but very few of Gehrig. When I see Gehrig film from that period, it's very exciting. I revealed one bit a few years ago when he was working at a New York gym with Jack Dempsey. There was no sound, but it was just marvelous because see Gehrig having fun. It's just wonderful. With Ruth, he's always having fun.
Yeah.
But Garrick, there seemed to be fewer discoveries, and he always did live. He played in the shadow of Ruth, except for the last few years after Ruth went to, you know, left the Yankees. And Eleanor Garrick was very concerned that Ruth would steal the show in the movie from, you know, from Gary Cooper as her husband, and she didn't want Babe Ruth in the movie at all.
It's probably wise because Babe Ruth was so much larger than life and large. Well. By the way, the name of Richard Sandemir's book is The Pride of the Yankees. And the other thing that I found is amazing, and this is an easy way to get into this, is baseball has been around for well over 100 years. And in almost every other sport that we talk about, we acknowledge that there were people who were good a long time ago, but all the great ones are contemporary. We just had this conversation about the NBA with the Golden State Warriors, and yet there is no doubt in anybody's mind that Babe Ruth is the greatest outfielder and Lou Gehrig is the greatest first baseman to ever play. This is 100, they played 100 years ago, and people still say that. Why is that?
Well, baseball is a game of numbers, and their numbers are astonishing. You know, I think Gehrig knocked in 175 runs at least twice. It's astonishing. And Ruth was Ruth. The only caveat you could make on players of that era is that they played in a segregated period, and you don't know what they would have been like against African American pitchers. I assume they'd still be great players, but you don't know for sure. But everybody back then was white, so they judged against each other, and the numbers are undeniable. Gehrig was a phenomenal player, but you could see in just his numbers. 1938, he declined. He had a great 1937, 38 he declined, 39 he played just a few games and he stepped away in Detroit. So
the only contemporary thing to stepping away like that is Magic Johnson, Magic Johnson walked away from the NBA but then came back.
Like he did come back. He was right in that he would fight it and that he was going to survive.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much the message of that 1991 press conference. And you didn't get that feeling from Gehrig's speech. What you got from Gehrig's speech was, I had a bad break. And, you know, some of the contemporary accounts of people, they were more struck by the bad break than anything else. Because in July 39, you knew he had stepped away. You knew he wasn't playing. But nobody knew for certain that he was dying.
No.
ALS was a mysterious disease.
Yes,
back
you didn't
then.
Know that. You had no, and, they had no idea.
And Gehrig himself thought he might come back. Or that it wouldn't be a fatal disease. So it was, with Magic, it was very different. And, you know, when Gehrig went out there to give his speech, he didn't go out with a piece of paper. He just stood there. And, you know, I detail the various accounts of whether there actually was a speech or whether there, you know, who wrote it, if it was written, did Gehrig rehearse it, did he not rehearse it. But whatever happened before he went on the field, whether he forgot the text in his suit pocket or whatever, he went out and delivered a pretty damn good speech without looking at anything.
It's wonderful.
Through tears.
It's wonderful. So the other question I had was like, who gets this movie today? I mean, I understand that the most important thing is that Gehrig did. He did not live, and so he is immortalized that way. But I was wondering if, like, a Tim Tebow is worthy of a movie, if a Derek Jeter, although you'd uncover bad stuff about Derek Jeter, if that speed skater, Dan Jansen, who everybody seemed to like and has now drifted away, if he's worthy of a movie. Have you thought of anything like that? Is there somebody who comes to mind for you, Richard?
You know, I think if we're doing that, we have to think of, you know, who's tragic. What elevates the movie is the tragedy, because it's not a baseball movie. So, but if you're looking purely for inspirational characters, you know, Tebow didn't win anything. He won the Heisman, but
won the Heisman and national championship. Yeah. He wasn't a pro athlete of consequence, but
right. But that ended by the time he was 21, 22. I don't know. I mean, Jeter is.
Nah.
I think even he'd have to admit he's not a terribly interesting.
He's actually boring all the time.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I mean, you know, there was a movie on Ernie Davis which didn't do very well.
Right. Died of leukemia.
But his name doesn't resonate. It's very hard to think of somebody who would have an equivalent thing. And fortunately, Magic Johnson survived, so he didn't need a
right. Good
movie
for
about
him. Good for him.
So
all right, Richard, are you selling books?
It just started being on sale yesterday, and you know, I was going to stand by the film section of Barnes & Noble on the Upper West Side to wait for people to take pictures with the buyers, but I didn't see anything yet. That's... Hopefully it will sell, and you know, I'm humping it like crazy.
All right, talk to you soon. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, Tony. My pleasure.
Richard Sandomir, the name of the book is The Pride of the Yankees. Richard's a very, very good writer and worked for the New York Times for many, many years. We will take a break. We will come back with what? Will we come back with news, Nigel?
I'm sorry, yeah, that's right.
Come back with news. Okay, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show. Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the MeUndies read. This is what separates me from elected officials who don't want to go into podcasts because, as they say, I'm not going to sell underpants over the air, and I will. There's a reason I've been telling you about MeUndies for months now. They're simply the softest, most comfortable underwear you will ever wear. Once you try them, you won't want to wear anything else unless you're naked. Please don't let me contemplate that or in your swimsuit that either. For every other second of your life, there's MeUndies. Every pair of MeUndies is sustainably sourced and made from micromodal, a fabric that's three times softer than cotton. If you're used to buying packs of uncomfortable, boring underwear that only come in white, gray, black, or tan, MeUndies will change everything because MeUndies comes in all kinds of colors or patterns, and they release a new limited edition pattern each month that always sells out. Michael, what's the weirdest pair of underpants that they sent you so far?
I think the confetti one that is
this week.
That's the June special edition. That might have pushed me over the edge. That's too bold even for me.
Right.
This they also sent me army soldier ones.
Is that right?
Yeah, little army green army men.
Fantastic. This month is a rainbow confetti print called Celebrate. Try MeUndies today. Go get the Celebrate pattern before they're all gone at MeUndies.com/TonyK. You'll save 20% off your first pair. You have to feel for yourself to see why MeUndies has sold over 5 million pairs to date. And if you don't love your first pair of MeUndies, they're free. So get 20% off your first pair plus free shipping at MeUndies.com/TonyK right now. MeUndies.com/TonyK. Try that again, Tony. See if you can say it normally. MeUndies.com/TonyK.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Is that a saxophone, isn't it?
I believe it is, yes.
Sounds like a saxophone. That's not a saxophone.
No.
This is Mike O'Connell from Sterling, Virginia, who is with us as we speak, who writes, I'm a longtime listener, first-time jingle submitter. Here submitted for your approval is this musical offering I recorded in 2009. The song Organize was recorded in Windsor, New York. I know it well, just outside of Binghamton. In fact, three of the five musicians heard here have ties to Binghamton University, and all five at one time or another call the Binghamton area home. That's me playing the organ, and though I lived in Binghamton for 30 years and got 2 degrees from BU, now I live in Northern Virginia. The bass player received his master's from Binghamton. The drummer has not only taught at Binghamton for nearly 20 years, he in fact was conductor of the orchestra that played, among other things, Pomp and Circumstance as you received your doctorate weeks ago. I begged him to pause the song and shout La Cheeserie, but he just didn't do it. Anyway, hope you enjoy the track. Hope to see you soon at Chatter. And in fact, Mike is here. Michael, if people want to submit music like this to get played on the show, how do they do it?
They can email jingles@tonykornheisershow.com or just bring it in person when they come to breakfast at Chatter.
You can do that. And we'll play the music.
It's a big crowd here today.
It's a big crowd.
Very large crowd, yes.
No, this is good. I mean, although you can't make money in the restaurant business serving breakfast. In fact, you can't make money in the restaurant business. But today looked like a day when we might be able to make a little bit of money. I assume the socialite is counting the house right now, you know, and has his fingers in the till somewhere. Do we have some news?
We do indeed, Mr. Tony. We will start out with your Washington Nationals and Ryan Zimmerman, who sat out a few games with a sore back. He was back with a vengeance yesterday, hit home runs number 18 and 19, which actually ties him for the franchise career lead.
He's also leading the National League right now. And,
yes.
And I mean, there is no way, and I'm not saying this to cast any aspersions on Ryan Zimmerman, because he's having a great year. But I am guaranteeing you that once a week someone says, would you please do this in this cup?
Yeah, I think
because
so.
Because this year is so much better than his last 2 years.
Right.
He's killing it.
Is he healthy?
He killed R.A. Dickey
healthy?
Last
is
night.
Is he healthier?
Much healthier, yeah. I mean, he had,
it's about launch angles. He remade his swing. There's a lot of stories, right, Michael? There's a lot of stories about this.
Yes, it's great when you go into the launch angle. Yes, Howard, he is healthy, though he had some back issues this past series before, you know, he came back last night.
And they put him in there because R.A. Dickey's a knuckleballer and not an overpowering fastball hitter, so he wouldn't have to swing that hard. This according to Dusty Baker. And he hit two out, and Daniel Murphy hit one out. And by the way, Joe Ross, put him on a clock. I mean, I mean, come on, pitch the ball. That's the job. You have to put the ball in play. Pitch the ball. I got out of this game last night after Zimmerman's second homer at 6-4 because I knew what was coming. I knew the bull because they'd already gone to this kid Gott, who they just called up. The second,
he got the W.
Yeah, the second pitch for Gott, if Wieters wasn't 6-5, that would still be rising over the screen. It was a totally wild, crazy pitch. But he let in one run, an inherited runner, but then he got the inning out. And then they went to the rest of the bullpen, and the rest of the bullpen was flawless. Did Blake Treinen not in the game, but the rest of the bullpen was flawless. And they end up winning the game 10-5.
10-5, right.
But am I right on Ross? Why does Ross take so long to pitch?
Oh, my God.
Probably because he was demoted this year. He's had some of his biggest professional struggles after having a great rookie year. I don't know.
Did you see what happened with Daniel Murphy in the second base umpire?
Yes.
That was crazy.
Explain that.
So, yeah, Murphy couldn't see.
Murphy's, by the way, a better fielder this year than ever.
He is.
Murphy's great.
He didn't have the view of the plate he wanted because the umpire, Alan Porter, was standing in front of him. And Murphy, and you can see this in a video, goes up and rather politely says, "Hey, can you move? I can't see." And the umpire refuses and then appears to mutter a bunch of curse words.
The F-bombs. Yes. There's no, he doesn't appear. It's clear.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why the ump was that angry.
Well, FP went crazy about this.
Well, he should have.
You know, how terrible it was. But no, I think the ump's got to get out of the player's way. You can't limit the vision of the players, can you? Can you?
I would agree. I imagine with all of the shifts in modern baseball, it becomes increasingly difficult for umpires to try and do sort of the job the way they were taught to do it. Because
right.
you then have to shift even more for your odd line, and they're being held accountable for their performance as well. To FP's point, it's the power is totally in the hands of the umps in these situations.
That's why Wilbon hates all umps.
And then you look at how this trickled down, like the trickle-down effect. What does this do for the calling of today's game around the bases and at home plate?
Well, I think Cowboy Joe Ross is one of the umps, and he loathes players.
But if this guy Parson, as they rotate, if he's behind home plate, then you're like, oh, good luck, Murphy, because, he'll call you out on everything.
What else?
Staying with baseball, Yasiel Puig in the headlines again. Game against Cleveland. I guess there were some fans right around home plate that were jawing with him before his at-bat, and then I guess did he have a home run or something? I don't know.
He came to
home run. They gave him a 2-0 lead, the Dodgers. And as he came back across home plate, they were still jawing at him, and he flipped them not just the bird, but the double bird.
The double TK salute.
Yes.
and then through an interpreter, whatever Yasiel Puig said, the interpreter response was that Yasiel Puig said, "They were talking to me." Well, it's got to be a little stronger than that, right? They were talking to me.
Maybe something lost in translation.
I think the double bird is sort of a universal language. You really don't need a translator after
Except that. Except Mr. Met can't do it because he, again, he only has
four fingers.
He has mitten hands.
Yes.
Yeah.
As Dodgers manager Dave Roberts said, "Well, are you sure it wasn't a number one that he was singling? You guys are both number one. Love you."
Yeah.
Mr. Tony, if people are holding out hope that Oprah Winfrey was going to run for president, they should probably back off that bet. She was asked, and she said, "Absolutely not. I will never run
for
public office.
Any elected office." Would you vote for Oprah Winfrey if she appeared on a ballot? Would you be inclined to do it?
I don't discuss my personal political.
Okay, good, because she's a member of what party? Zero party. You have no idea. Would you vote for her?
Without hesitation.
I would vote for her. If she ran for something, I would vote for her. I think
really?
I would.
Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm.
Because I like her.
Look what we've got.
I like her.
Could she be worse than that?
I like her. I
do. Oh, there's a slogan.
I like her. I'm sorry, she's not running. I like her.
And there's a chance that she would give everybody in the country like a car, like she does.
Yeah,
that
would be great. Or something would be under your chair.
Yes, everybody look under your chair.
Yeah, that's
something
great.
Nice there. Mr. Tony, this is a rather disturbing and interesting story that you had your eye on. There was a French historian by the name of Antonin Dehaze, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, 32-year-old, who'd been working in the National Archives.
Here
in Maryland, I guess, with the National Archives office.
Well, here in the greater
DC
America.
Yes. Downtown.
In greater America.
In
you
your
said
country.
It was French.
Well, in your United
so
States.
So here.
That's right. And apparently what he's been doing, and he's admitted to this, is stealing dog tags and then selling them for profit on eBay. This is despicable.
What
this
is
includes
that?
a dog tag from one of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Roy Battelle was one of the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he's, I guess, he could face up to a decade in prison for this.
And wasn't there something some years back?
Yes.
Somebody involved in the Smithsonian was taking feathers.
Oh, I don't know about that.
They were taking feathers for their own personal collection.
Well, and somebody
feathers
was stealing,
had some import.
Somebody was stealing rare books too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was somebody.
But this guy's a grave robber. This is creepy.
Terrible.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's awful. Yes. These are dead people.
These are dead people, dead military, you know, heroes.
Yeah.
He's stealing.
So what are we going to do to him?
Well, I think he's French, so we say, all right, we can't come back here. I mean, it's right. Your country. I could face that at any moment myself. Right. But I think, you just say, you've got to go home.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't go in there. Because I guess he went and he said, oh, I want to look at this particular file. And then somebody checked on it, and they were like, 52 dog tags missing. And they're like, we think it's you, mate.
It's terrible. So,
yes. Mr. Tony, there's been a settlement now between the fraternity from the University of Virginia and Rolling Stone magazine.
Rolling Stone has taken a bath, and deservedly so for this one.
Yes.
This totally fake story.
This fraternity just ordered 50 kegs.
Kegs. 1.65 million. How much beer is that,
Come
kids?
Come on, party.
Phi cap aside, this is all, of course, stems from the Rolling Stones article that detailed sexual assault.
It was all fake.
Yeah.
Hashtag sad.
Failing.
The Wire copy on that said, and the story has been discredited. And I didn't like that. That to me, that wasn't strong enough.
It was a fake.
It was a totally bogus, fake, irresponsible
situation, right?
Yeah, and one of the deans there has won a lot of money.
Yeah, she won a few million dollars.
Yeah.
The fraternity originally, and it's I'm sorry, what's the Phi Kappa Psi? They wanted to sue for $25 million. So,
but they took 1.65 because, as Gene said, Pabst was on sale.
Right.
They knew they could get all they wanted, the PBR they wanted for 1.65
Keystone,
million.
Keystone, baby.
That's great.
Keith Stone.
Mr. Tony, I know you wanted to talk about this as well. It's not just LeVar Ball who says he can beat Michael Jordan. Now it's Lonzo has said he can beat Jordan.
Well, Lonzo Ball can beat Michael Jordan one-on-one. Michael Jordan is he 52 years old?
Something like that.
All right, and Lonzo's 19.
54.
Okay, so he can. It's when his father, who is in his 40s, says he can beat he can't beat Michael Jordan. LeVar Ball, I'm not going to get crazy about this, but LeVar Ball is somebody who is on television all the time. We would never put him on the PTI show. Mike can't stand him, and I have no regard for him, and I just think he is there just to sell himself. He has nothing to add to some greater discussion out there on any level as far as I'm concerned. And on a serious note, I feel the same way about Alex Jones. I mean, you read that today.
Yes.
Alex Jones has apparently been interviewed by Megyn Kelly, and this is being teased. He's a charlatan.
Yeah.
He's not newsworthy on any level. And, what are you going to get out of it? You're going to expose him? Everybody who knows him, most responsible people know that he is totally irresponsible. And you're just going to succeed in making him popular to some degree or giving him a greater platform. And you shouldn't. They shouldn't do it.
It's
controversial,
sure,
to say the least.
Are you sure Lonzo Ball could beat Michael Jordan?
Yes. He's 19-year-old All-American basketball player. Michael Jordan can't get off. He can't dunk anymore.
Can I ask you a question? I've been a little distracted by the Trump presidency. Who are these
people? The big baller brand.
But who? This is like the Kardashians of ball.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. But it's LeVar. It's LeVar, the dad.
Like, who are they? I don't get it. Is this kid a great ball player?
Yes.
Or
he's really Lonzo's
good.
Really good.
And the dad is just glomming onto him to.
The dad is attempting to create a sneaker line called the Big Baller Brand, which will sell for $450 each.
Come
but
on.
In the workout that Lonzo Ball had with the Lakers, he was wearing Adidas. He's not even wearing his own sneaker.
I
put him in with the Kardashians. What little I know, Kardashians.
Yeah. I can see Michael Jordan psyching this kid out completely.
He can't jump
anymore.
All
right, okay.
I mean, Lonzo Ball goes over him. He goes over him. He backs him down. He goes over him. I'm not saying it would be 21-0.
Could he beat Kevin Durant one-on-one?
No.
Of course.
No, can't beat Kevin Durant.
No, but he's a good play. They're saying he'll probably go number two in the draft.
Well,
the
maybe. Are we good?
Maybe. Yeah, I think we're good.
Are we out of here?
Yeah, sure.
So we have Old Guy next. And during Old Guy, Howard has waited. He's waited a long time.
I'm not going to say a word.
Howard has stuff to say.
I'm not
when
saying
we return
a word.
With Howard Fineman, I am
Catfish.
Tony Kornheiser.
Catfish.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Upside.com read. I know we do need Michael on this one. You've heard me talk about how Upside.com saves you or your company big on business travel and gives you a big gift card every trip you buy. And the copy says I had to see for myself if it's too good to be true. And Michael, what did we do to prove that it was not too good to be true?
We did a trial run, so I went to Upside.com and I set you up on a phantom trip to Atlanta, flying first class.
Of course.
No stops, direct flight.
Yes.
And I had you checking into the Ritz-Carlton.
Ritz-Carlton in Buckhead, I'm sure.
Two bathrobes.
Two bathrobes.
Probably more than that. You'd be concierge level.
Yeah.
And
we were, I think, due
$182.
I think the socialite was there.
Amazon gift card. Now, in full disclosure, we did not complete this transaction. This was just...
It was a test run.
Yeah, test run.
But people can do it.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, anybody can sign on and do this. You have... The first option, in other words, if you name a city that you want to fly to and any hotel that you want to stay at, the first option gets you a gift card and saves money for your company. Then Upside shows you other options, an earlier flight, the same kind of hotel down the block. You have to be a pretty fancy block. And that would get you even more in gift cards and cost your station, this station, or your company even less. That is the beauty of Upside. Being a little flexible gets you more. Upside.com is the real deal. And when you use the promo code Tony, you're guaranteed to get at least a $100 Amazon gift card your first trip. That is my name, Tony, T-O-N-Y, to get a $100 gift card. Save big on travel. Get a big gift card every trip. Upside.com. That is Upside.com. There's a minimum purchase required, and you see the site for complete details. Three live reads today. Count them. Three.
Excellent.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Daydream Believer by the Monkees. This was recorded 52 years ago. I don't know where Gene stands on the Monkees. I like this song.
No, and it was one of the few songs that has the name Gene in it, so I always sort of promoted it.
In terms of critical commentary, I think this may be the best. I think this and Pleasant Valley Sunday are the two best Monkees songs. Did you cover the Monkees with the classics?
God, no.
Right. I'm sorry to have offended you.
How dare you, Dr. Kornheiser.
Two best Monkees songs.
Right.
It's an extremely low bar.
It is. Yeah. It is a low bar. But Daydream Believer's nice.
I like it.
No. I admit
Davy Jones in the
league. No, we did not. We were covering Eric Burdon and the Animals.
And they were far better.
Yeah.
Far better than the Monkees. But I don't want to just totally disparage the Monkees.
Why not? They were terrible.
Oh.
Terrible. This was, and by the way, it's the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love.
San
Francisco Summer of Love.
Were you high for most of that summer?
I don't remember.
You sound like Jeff Sessions.
I can't recall. Right. Well, for it being the Summer of Love, this was the number one hit. This started off the Summer of Love as the number one hit. So, and apparently a bunch of people didn't want to
record
it.
That was a Scott McKenzie.
No, that was written by somebody from the Mamas and the Papas. Are you going to San Francisco? Be sure to
John Phillips.
Be sure to wear a flower.
Yeah, and
in
Scott
your hair.
McKenzie. Scott McKenzie did that song. Thankfully, his only hit. It's a terrible song.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's a terrible song. All right, Howard Feinman is here, the intergalactic editor of the Huff Post. And we begin every time when we have a whole session with Howard with the question, where are we now?
Yeah, the Barry Sruluga question.
Yeah, where are we now?
Well, Tony, first let me congratulate you belatedly on your doctorate.
I'm only two behind
you. You're two behind me, and I've got one in the chute, so you're never going to catch up.
This was brought here yesterday for you from an actual doctor, an anesthesiologist, one for me and one for you.
Excellent.
That's a legitimate stethoscope, and he said to give it to you.
Okay, we will, according to this, never mind, I won't make
we'll
that
joke.
We'll
not look at Uranus.
I'll just make that joke again.
Right.
And I also wanted to say I've been inspired by the cabinet meeting I covered the other day. And I just wanted to say that it is an honor and a privilege.
And a blessing. Yes.
And I feel blessed. I feel blessed to be
to
be carrying your agenda here in the Kornheiser administration.
Where are we now?
We're entering a long sort of wintertime struggle. This is also the 100th anniversary of the American entrance into World War I, and this politically is turning into World War I. Donald Trump is focused ultimately on one bottom line, that is 34, which is if he gets 34 Republican senators to support him, he won't be convicted in an impeachment trial in the Senate.
Right.
And Donald Trump is willing to go all the way and do whatever he can, no matter how much the Congress tries to chase him. to fight back in what he, I think, rightly sees as a war between his group of people in the White House and most of the rest of Washington, and indeed, if you believe the polls, most of the rest of the country at this point. He has the strong support, I'd say fairly strong support, of still about 85% of Republicans in the country. He has almost no Democrats who are willing to admit that they support him. Like, he has 4 or 5% of Democrats. And he's down to about one-third or less of independents. So, but that doesn't faze him or deter him. In an odd way, it comforts him. And I think the purpose of the Sessions public hearing yesterday, which Sessions himself, the Attorney General, asked for. Don't forget that Jeff Sessions asked for that and asked for it to be in public. So that's basically Sessions and Trump. And don't forget, Sessions was one of Donald Trump's first supporters.
Early supporter.
Early supporters in the Senate. The first and, for a long time, only Senate supporter. And they're saying, and Sessions is saying, number one, I'm still with you, boss. In other words, I'm going out here publicly and, you know, I'm going to pound the table and say everybody's lying and I'm offended and so on. But I'm with you. Yes, I've been recused from the specific case of investigating Russia's involvement, if any, in the Trump campaign. But I'm still Attorney General and I'm going to protect you to the extent that I can. And that, to me, is a symbol of the mentality of Donald Trump and the more of the hardliners around him who are determined to fight on any and all level to stay right where they are.
It would seem to me, and I don't know this, so it will be in the form of a question, but it would seem to me that there might be certain things that would be tipping points. I think possibly if Donald Trump were to fire Mueller from that particular job, which I guess he has the right to do, that might be a tipping point. Do you think he will fire him?
Well, technically, the decision is up to Rod Rosenstein.
I know, but he takes his orders from...
Well, yeah, or Rod Rosenstein, who testified yesterday also in a different hearing, said that if he didn't think it was justified, he wouldn't do it. If it were justified, he would consider it. You know, history doesn't rhyme, but there's sort of echoes there. And you can remember back to the Saturday Night Massacre when various people in the Justice Department wouldn't follow the Nixon order to get rid of Archibald
Cox. Elliot Richardson was one of them,
yes,
right?
Yes, right. And finally, it was Robert Bork who was willing to do it.
Right.
In this case, Rosenstein might say yes or no. Somebody under him might say yes or no. Trump would eventually find somebody who would say yes. And then it would be up to the House and the Senate to impeach and try the president, presumably.
You think that would happen? I mean, you're going down that road. Well, when you say 34,
I'm back timing it in the way I think Donald Trump is thinking about it. Okay.
Right.
He's reserving, and all the leaks about, you know, from Chris Ruddy, who I know well down at Newsmax in Florida and who's a friend of Trump's. Chris Ruddy put this out on PBS the other night saying, you know, Trump's been thinking about toying with the idea of firing.
Right, that's the test.
And the New York Times confirmed it today. Trump's reserving that right. And Donald Trump would do it. He would absolutely do it and dare the Congress to impeach and convict him, which is where I get back to the 34 Republican senators.
This is what I'm asking you, because when you watch these hearings, you notice that most Republicans are just there to prop up the administration, and most Democrats are just there to tear down whoever is testifying at that moment.
Well, I would disagree with... Let me stop for a second. I think that was a little... There's a little bit of variation among the Republicans. Some of them are a little strident, but a lot of them are being very, very careful.
This is what I'm asking. Something like the public firing of Mueller, would that bring Republicans down on
the administration? Well, I have, from the very beginning, going back to... you know, I hope Marvin doesn't mind if I mention him here, but as part of a family of note in the Republican Party going back generations, I think people starting with Jeb Bush and many others said, no, we can't, we're not going to take, this is not going to happen. We're not going to take this guy. Well, he bowled everybody over in the primaries. In the election, people said, no, he's a joke, or he's a, whatever he's doing on the bus or and so on. We're not going to take him.
He won.
People are expecting a the Republicans to at some point say enough. And so far, I haven't seen it.
Well, there's two. There's, I mean, and I'm not saying John McCain and other than Lindsey Graham, who have been publicly right. critical for some long period of time. You don't see anybody
well,
else.
Well, the key person.
What about your boy?
The key person is Mitch McConnell, who, as you know, I've known for decades.
Yeah.
And I was with the senator and his wife at the Derby last year, and he said, you know, people vote. They voted for Trump. And he sort of gave me the, what are we going to do about it? It wasn't the world's biggest endorsement, I didn't think. You know, it's like, well, that emoji, you know, with
right.
the hands up.
Yeah, what do you gotta
do? That's like Michael Jordan hitting those threes when he has the flu.
Right. You know. But I think that Mitch McConnell has a very finely tuned seismograph for the grassroots of the Republican Party. And so far, that the Republican Party voters, at least according to the polls, are sticking with the president. I don't know what the breaking point will be. In other words, I've expected various breaking points over the months,
but they don't
or
happen.
Year, but they haven't happened.
So I guess this is the most reasonable question. As we watch this unfold every single day and more people testify or, in effect, claim executive privilege because they don't actually testify without saying they're claiming executive privilege, and it goes on and on and on, you wonder to yourself, will anything get passed? Will the focus of the government be continually on these hearings? And will, in fact, if there is an agenda, will anything get passed?
Well, two things on that. First of all, with all the scuffling going on in the front of the room, in the back room, a lot is being done administratively by the administration. In other words, they are ripping out regulations right
and
left.
I know.
They're doing all kinds
of stuff. Sea turtles, they're done. We found that out yesterday.
Well, okay, you can joke about the sea turtles, but there's a lot of other stuff that they're doing that's very serious, that's happening administratively. They haven't nominated thousands of people that need to be nominated, in part because I think there's kind of a strategy of malignant neglect of the government, which fits in with the Trump philosophy on many levels in terms of regulation of business. He wants none if he can get away with it. In terms of legislation, the same guy that we just were talking about, Mitch McConnell, is trying to engineer a way to get the repeal and replacement of Obamacare.
Which was supposed to happen within a month of the ascendancy
I know,
to the president.
I know. He's trying to get it through the Senate like on a secret sealed train. It's like Lenin going to the Finland station. And I don't know how that's going to work at all. So, no, he's passed nothing. I mean, Donald Trump, that was what was so bizarre about that cabinet meeting the other day.
When everybody said how great everything was.
He got everybody in there.
Great meeting.
For an 11-minute.
Great meeting.
It's a wonderful meeting.
He brought fantastic meeting.
Yeah. He brought the press in and the cameras and then required every member of the cabinet to go around, you know, they went around the table.
Marionette show.
And everybody had to sing the praises of Donald Trump.
It was actually North Korean.
And it was very
right.
North Korean.
It was bizarre.
It was so North Korean.
Or Russian.
You expected Dennis Rodman to be there.
Or
it was
Soviet.
That North Korean.
But the fact is that, yes, in terms of legislation, there's been zero. Absolutely zero. So
where are we now? Where we are now is that
this is going to go underground to a certain extent. Special prosecutor Mueller, who knows that, you know, Trump is pondering getting rid of him, is hiring. He's staffing up with a lot of really smart people. He made a couple of them, yes, have contributed to Democratic candidates over the years. So the Newt Gingriches of the world are fighting back. But these guys are people who know, and women are people who know financial transactions, who know auditing trails. And what they're going to do is they're going after all the people around Trump. They're going to look for what they can squeeze and flip them on in terms of their financial dealings and see if, when they squeeze them, these are people like Manafort and Carter Page and Flynn and all the others, see if they squeeze them that they know anything about Russian collusion in the campaign. So that's one trail. The other trail is obstruction of justice. I mean, I think... openly, it's a case of obstruction of justice when the president fires the guy who's investigating him, namely Comey. To fire Comey in and of itself was a kind of obstruction of justice, but that would not pass muster in a courtroom.
I wouldn't think so.
It wouldn't pass muster in a courtroom, and it's not going to pass muster in an impeachment trial.
Okay.
So the special prosecutor will look for things to flip people to get at Trump, if there's anything to get. If there is something to get, then it goes to the Congress for impeachment. I think that Trump, who can take a punch, by the way, say what you want about Trump. He has thin skin and so on, but he can take a punch, and he's willing to take every punch all the way through this term,
and then stab you in the back.
And I'm not convinced that he won't make it. So this is the condition we're in. We're going to be in this fight all the way through the Trump years.
Thank you, Howard. Gene just sighed. It was a dispirited
contempt.
Sigh. A dispirited contempt. Sigh. We will take a break. We'll come back. We have jingles.
That's right.
And
I believe
we have
one written in honor of 3DP. Soon to be 4DP.
Yes.
Where's the fourth school?
I'm not at liberty to disclose.
What are the three you got so far? You got Colgate?
They're all inside jobs. They're mostly inside jobs. You got Colgate, Louisville, and Washington and Jefferson College, which I could claim as two because they're two names.
No, you can't claim that. That's like you can't claim Trinidad and Tobago is two victories. No, it's one.
It's another Pennsylvania
school. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
That's spatial urination, but how it's got a new name that all the littles are out there saying. D is for doctor, P is professor, yeah, but getting a sign changed from an old name, that's what's tough. It's sort of like getting a degree minus all matriculation. Dr. Tony says it's harder being rich and famous, but 3DP, it seems he respects us. Oh, did I mention Chatter's now open for breakfast? Whatever happened to those others from his band, the classics? Bellbomb's banana driving cars like those Uber taxis. As for cars, Howard's license plates is 3DP. Speaking of plates, did you know Tony owns an eatery? Don't mind the sign with the C to the H, the A to the D. That ain't such Chatter.
It's a Chat-ass baby.
But back to 3DP, because he's a topic clearly. Quick aside, have you tried Wilmot's chili? How many celebrity interns did you help to birth? Or have you ever held a job that covered more than Earth? Well, if you want to see him, come on down to Chatter. Open for breakfast, that's all that matters.
Come down for 3DP.
Hey, pay Tony.
Come down for 3DP.
Buy breakfast, please.
Come down for 3DP.
How about corn?
Jason Fuse, fabulous
that
tune.
Is great.
That is so fantastic.
Fabulous tune for 3DP.
Can I talk about the Penguins now? Oh, no.
No.
Okay.
Before we get into the mailbag, I want to thank Richard Sandomir of the New York Times for coming on the show today. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Upside.com, Audible Books, and MeUndies. Please support them the way they support our podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play. If you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We had a great crowd today. We're all the way down at the bar. What is so great is that the people at the bar have brought their children.
Oh,
and
just
get right at the bar at a very young age.
Yeah, I learned that early.
From Ethan in Lake St. Louis. Dear Dr. Tony, I have a very quick fashion and golf question for Michael. I'm heading to Erin Hills for round one of the U.S. Open. That will be played tomorrow. I'm unsure about the wearing of the gallery badge and proper etiquette. Do I buy one of those plastic lanyard badge holder deals, or do I wear it on my belt loop, or is there a third option I'm unaware of? I will hang up and listen.
If they have a woven lanyard, you might want to buy that as a souvenir. You might be able to use that for keys down the road. Just put it on your belt loop. They don't check once you get inside the security perimeter.
Okay.
Unless you're going to a fancy, tower.
From Casey McGee, I am one of the publicists working on this season of MasterChef, and I just received an email from contestant Sam, who wrote into your show asking to be a guest. I've copied his email below for you to reference. We read it yesterday. On yesterday's show, Tony read the email aloud and said that he would agree to have Sam on the show, so I would love to coordinate with you and your team. We don't have a team.
Team.
This is just us. Please let me know how best to proceed in booking him as a guest and what would work best for you. Sam is willing to go on the show whenever it's convenient for your schedule.
But
so
I watch MasterChef, but don't they need to keep secret
when he's done.
I'll get the rest of the team
from Jason Hoffman. So Lisa brought in Jason Hoffman yesterday from CNN.
That's right.
I attended the taping of the podcast Monday after some friends contacted me upon hearing Chris mention CNN's own Jason Hoffman. I felt the need to clear the air. First, you referred to me as Saliza's valet. While that is not what I do on the news desk at the network, I will let that slide. I find it far more important to address my friends asking me, what stupid canary yellow shirt did you wear to Chatter on Monday? It was not canary yellow, but rather the gold of my alma mater, the University of Missouri, home of the best journalism school in the country, setting me up with the skills to work at CNN as Saliza's valet or whatever else I do. All that aside, I'd like to thank you for connecting me with my friends. I didn't know were littles, as well as my daily gym entertainment, which is very, very
great
nice.
Great J school.
Yeah, he's good. Charlie Burt, Springfield, Virginia. I really needed a ride the other night, and as if by magic, an Uber driver appeared out of nowhere. As he dropped the key inquisition, "Are you Michael Kornheiser?" I, of course, retorted in McConaughey Saliza style.
Sure.
Sure. Best $8 I never spent, please tell Michael. From Brian Polian.
You played coach.
Our own.
Yes.
You played a band yesterday, Crooked Coast from Falmouth, Massachusetts. Falmouth is a beautiful little town just over the Bourne Bridge in Cape Cod. My parents purchased a home there nearly 15 years ago, and I've been sponging off them ever since. Our trips to the Cape with the family are my absolute favorite time of the year. Landfall, where Crooked Coast plays on Friday nights, is a terrific spot on the water that features a stuffed lobster. It is so rich and buttery, it literally causes me chest pains while my arteries harden. Yet I gleefully jam it into my mouth. When I chase the meal with a Lipitor peel, I remind myself that I only get to have it once a year. You also mentioned Peter Gammons being on the Cape. You would be shocked by the number of accomplished people from the world of football whose summer on the Cape. Some of the most enlightening things I've learned about the game came from listening to conversations between my dad and his friends on a golf course. I'm shocked, however, to learn you've never been to Cape Cod. The coral-colored shirts and boat shoes would fit quite nicely there. All the best, everyone. Never been to Cape Cod. Samantha from the district. Although I am not a doctor, I am a psychiatric nurse practitioner. And as a Vanderbilt grad, I appreciate all of your free pub for Nashville last week. I stopped in to chatter for breakfast a few weeks ago on my way to work, started talking with the woman at the table next to me, and to my surprise, she was also a psychiatric nurse practitioner. Who would have thought we'd both enjoy listening to a neurotic old man talk about his obsessive compulsive tendencies and rage towards new technology? Anyway, we had a great conversation before we both had to run to work. For me, work that day was at an assisted living facility in Chevy Chase, D.C. Not Ingleside, but another beautiful facility where I expect that you will soon be my patient. I can see it now, pacing the halls in your $400 jeans and threadbare flying shirt, holding an assortment of rocks and feathers, counting to yourself under your breath until you yell out, "Ride the pony, Michael." I took my parents to the Homestead Resort in Hot Springs, Virginia last weekend. We found your golf ball in the woods.
Let's save that contact.
Michael wants that news.
From John Herson in Atlanta. Michael, don't get the $8 back from Uber. Get the company. Sue the SOBs.
Ooh,
reach out
go.
To the littles. Own How it. Many of them have been billed for phantom Uber rides? They retain the smartest man in Washington, D.C., Abby Lowell, to represent your class action against Uber. As lead plaintiff, you should get as much as Abby. Remember, don't get even. Get it all. Get it all.
The CEO of Uber has stepped aside, by the way.
Throughout our goodbye tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
May the Lord have mercy on me.
There you go.
And my piano.
You can tell them I'm coming.